I know we're starting, but I feel like my audio is coming out of my computer, oddly enough.
It's coming out of your ass.
I just don't want the wrath of Josh, like, hearing an echo on my thing because I'm not wearing headphones.
I know. By the way, Josh is, like, sneaky funny. He's really fucking funny.
I know.
He's a character.
I know. He's thrown us some curveballs here recently.
He has.
Like when he got arrested for... They had to have arrested him for minor in possession because he looks like he's 10. But he had like a Zima on the beach. And he texted us saying, I should have just said I use it as a visual cue, like my thing, instead of actually drinking it. That's how he could have gotten out of the ticket. But instead... Right. He got busted on the beach with a like Bartles and James.
I was just going to say Bartles and James. You stole that, you bastard. I was waiting to insert Bartles and James.
Oh, shit.
But I used to.
Son of a bitch, stole my line.
I used to have Zima parties.
What's that from?
I don't know. It's familiar, but I don't know.
It's the last line of Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yeah. Wow, how do you remember that?
I'm going to go see about a girl.
I know that one.
Son of a bitch stole my line.
Son of a bitch stole my line. It's not your fault. Dude, what are you doing? Get away or get off of me. It's not your fault. Okay, bro, that's not your fault.
It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
Abandon my boy.
All right, sorry. So you used to have Zima parties?
Yeah, I had Zima parties back in the day when it first came out. We like got cases of Zima. I think we were underage probably. And my friend John had like a back house and we had girls over and they were like, oh my God, Zima. And we like, we're fucking Zima freaks.
What happened to Zima?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because that seltzer... which essentially, that's what it was, now it's taken over the fucking world. Everyone's drinking these seltzers now.
Do you have a White Claw?
Yeah, like a White Claw.
Do you
Claw
have a White Claw?
Or High
Bud
Noon.
Light Seltzer, yeah.
Or Arctic Char, or whatever the hell it's called. There's like so many of them now. Now every brand does it. Budweiser has one. Corona has one. You know, it's hot right now, Joe.
Yeah, the seltzer market. We should do Daddy Issues Seltzer.
We should...
What about the idea of changing the whole messaging of this podcast and just every time I think we should do it, we get somebody reaching out to us that sends a text like this, and I'm not going to say the name, but I am going to read the text that Margo shared with us if I can find it. Did you bother to read it? This guy poured his heart out.
I did. I got a bit weepy.
From a guy named Joe, didn't know how else to reach out to you guys. The episodes lately have been such a huge help in some of my personal battles lately with my family relationship, personal addictions, and just the overall stresses of life. I know the show is still growing, and I've shared it with countless friends and families and will continue to do so. Please keep doing what you're doing. I just wanted you to both know that these might be some of the realest and most powerful conversations happening right now, and it means so much. Your listeners are truly benefiting from each episode, and I look forward to the next one more than the last. Thank you for doing it. Seriously, would love to chat with you guys more if you ever need a random, irrelevant guest. I appreciate you both immensely. That makes me feel, on one hand, so great that we're doing this. On the other, I feel like we should be doing more. I don't know that we're pouring our heart and soul into this podcast if it's that important to somebody named Joe.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. As far as the rebranding aspect of it goes, I think whatever we call it, it's going to get into the same areas. You know what I mean? I think you and I just having discussions can go from the absurd to the real very quickly. You know, whether it's called Daddy Issues or Two Sensitive Men or whatever it is, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe. But isn't that great, though? I mean, I know we fuck around and we joke about not making any money, which is no joke. We do not make any money.
Yeah, right.
But when you get these emails and texts and comments that say that, it feels like it's all worth it for some reason, you know?
It does, but I don't know what we're talking about that is hitting home with this guy so much over the last couple of episodes. That's what I say. I feel like it's the last couple of episodes, although people seem to like Troy's episode a lot. I don't know that we're doing enough or putting enough thought behind this. We're just kind of getting on and talking, which I think is the good and the bad of it. Bothering me right now is that your legs are all veiny. What is going on with you? Are you just thinned out or what's happening? Why do you have veins all over your
right here
calves? Yeah, what is that?
It's veins. I mean, I'm a vascular person, and it could be just the lighting. You know, I don't know. It's a weird angle right now. I'm sitting sort of crotch to camera vibe, you know? It's
right.
Like it's all right here.
It's like, yeah, I'm having a Sharon Stone moment that I don't want.
I guess I could do this.
It's so awful.
I have been working out, though. You know, I have been running. I've dropped a few LLBs or just LBs. Or is it LLBs?
There's LL Bean and then LBs.
No, but I'm just a vascular man. Like when I get my blood drawn, you know, the technician gets very excited.
Yeah. I'm the same way with that part of my arm being very vascular. It always bothered me, and it bothered my dad when he was dying in the hospital for 7 months when the nurses, male and female, and God bless them. I mean, where would we be if all of a sudden that supply chain of people willing to be nurses dried up? I mean, I'm astounded at their tireless efforts, especially these days with COVID and everything else. But when they would make inanimate objects in a way to kind of make it not as intimidating, animate. Mm-hmm. They would animate them, meaning they would say, you know, oh, let's check on this little guy down here. Oh, this vein is not really cooperating right now. Let's check this guy over here and let's get this. My dad would look at me and he had this trach and this tube and couldn't really talk. And he would look at me while they're fumbling around on his arm trying to get an IV in. Ugh. And just roll his eyes like, oh, fuck.
Ugh,
like, this God. Is just, I don't, just save the talk, find the vein, put it in, and leave me alone. And when you're at that point in life, it's like, I can't even entertain this right now.
I used to pass out taking blood, but now I don't. But there was a point where something happened and I would just get super lightheaded and I'd have to lie down. Because it was just like too intense for me.
The sight of blood, or just
no?
When I
would take it, just the sort of idea, you know, that they were drawing blood out of me.
Or maybe you just don't have a lot of blood.
What do you mean? I've got plenty of blood.
I don't know. Maybe them taking those. Every time I get blood drawn, and they're like popping another little canister on that thing, and here comes another big shoot of blood out. I'm like, do I have enough for this?
Yeah.
Am I going to walk out of here like looking like I've just crawled out of a crypt? I don't, it seems like a lot that they take when they're checking for everything.
Do you think this is the kind of conversation that Joe was talking about that changes his life?
No, but you and I almost got into it last night, which we walked to the edge of having a huge fight, which Margot captured on our texts.
Yeah.
Because, you're out playing golf. Hey, your birthday.
My birthday.
God love you.
I'm with my mom and Kurt, like, out
okay,
on the golf
but just
court.
Give me a time. Just give me a time. That's it. Give me a time to do this thing. And
look,
I'm in. I'll adjust to you. But just don't let it hang there so that I can't plan the next day. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. But okay. I under normal circumstances, I probably would have gotten back to you much sooner. But as you know, when you do play golf, your phone sort of goes away. You forget about shit. You're playing with your parents. It's my birthday. I've got
who else? Was it just the three of you?
Yeah.
It was you, Kurt Russell, and Goldie Hawn. What do you think that would go for in an auction?
Oh, that's good. That's good.
10 grand, 15 grand, 20 grand?
Maybe 10.
10 grand, if it was the right cause.
It depends what venue.
Yeah, if it was like a high dollar, everybody's trying to impress the person at the table next to them. Yeah, yes. I would say 10 grand at a minimum to go play golf with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Yes.
and Oliver Hudson. But
do you, I mean, are you a birthday guy? I mean, do you care about your birthday?
Not at all. And so when you and I were kind of going back and forth, I'm showing the text chain to Michelle. And she's like, look, you know Oliver's a sensitive guy. You know he loves his birthday. He's like me. You don't care about your birthday. He cares about his birthday. I don't care about my birthday at all. I don't care.
I don't care about my birthday. I mean, she's got that one wrong. You know, like my mom and Aaron are the ones that arrange everything. My mom made a tea time. They organized a dinner for me the night before. Like I'm not a, it's just another day. Type of a thing.
Okay, I'm glad to know that. I thought you were very emotional about these ceremonial dates that
pop up. What the fuck? No, I'm not. No, not at all. Not at all. You know, I love when my kids make me cards. Like, that really makes me happy. And they did yesterday, and they write, like, sweet things. And that I love. You know?
Yeah, well, of course. That's the best part of it, when you have kids. And
yes.
And, yeah, but okay, good. I thought you were different.
But I did have a party. Oh my God, someone called me. Lotito Joe. I don't know who the fuck that is. Lotito. Is that you?
That name was in your phone?
It says Lotito Joe. I have no idea. I don't think that's in my phone. Sometimes on the phone now, shit just comes up that's not actually in your phone.
Oh, yeah. It says might be.
Yes.
Lotito
yeah.
Jones.
Yeah, Lotito Joe. I don't know.
Lotito Joe. Yeah. Sorry. Maybe that's Joe that wrote us the nice text.
Oh, maybe. Maybe he got my number.
He's like, hey, guys, get to it. This sucks.
He's in real time listening, tapped in.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, I had a party, which was really nice, actually, you know, and I'm so thankful that Aaron and Mom organized it at my mom's house, and she got a bartender, and we got some food, and there was like 20, 25 people there, and it was great because it's not very often that you get together with your good friends anymore. You know, life is just nutty. Pandemic aside, just busy, kids, your own shit that you're dealing with. It's hard for everyone to get together at the same place.
Absolutely. And, so you had 25, were you in LA?
Or yeah.
So you played golf in LA. I thought you were in the desert.
No, I was in LA.
Okay.
I was in LA.
I was going to say, how could you get 25 people to the desert to celebrate your birthday?
We just did a birthday dinner, and then I played golf the next day.
Where do you play golf when your mom and Aaron arrange it? Where'd you play?
Mountain Gate. We just played up at Mountain Gate. It was
okay.
It was all right. You know, greens are all right, but I don't know, man. That course is...
Don't say it. You got to walk in there with your head held high.
That's true.
You don't want to say something on here and maybe somebody. But yeah, I that's good. That's good to know. I'm glad that I wasn't ruining your birthday by walking up to the edge of a fight and then ducking back.
No, I got the text. I knew that you were on edge. I know you so well now. It's crazy. I can feel you through the phone. And I had a decision to make, you know, and I was like, all right, let me use some humor and, you know, some sarcasm to sort of try to diffuse this a little bit. But I was holding back because I was like, I wanted to be like, dude, fucking Joe, man, don't get me started. But I was like, all right, no. I know he's busy. He's got shit to do. And when you get fiery, there's just no stopping you. It's like a runaway train.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more from Oliver and me. I had to walk out of the room, separate issue, last night. I don't know. I did a speech yesterday afternoon. I've got these two games coming up this week, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But the kids were acting crazy. Blake wouldn't go to sleep. And it's one of those, and he's already calling us on our bullshit. Like Blake, you know, Michelle's like, now you need to make a smart choice here. You need to make a wise decision. You need to make a smart choice. And it's the same stuff. I'm like, Blake, get in bed.
Yeah.
And she's like, Joe, that we don't need that. I'm like, well, he's not doing anything. And, yeah. then I'm like, Blake, get in bed. He looks at me and goes, no. And I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do. I can't call him on anything. I'm not going to, you know, hit him. I'm not going to spank him.
Yeah.
So, okay, I have nothing. And it's nighttime. It's not like I can go, oh, you're playing with that toy. Give that to me.
Yeah.
He's just walking around. He's like, no. Okay. So mm-hmm. I had to walk downstairs, go in the basement, and do some work just to not lose my mind.
Yeah.
It was just one of those days. I just felt like everybody's picking me clean here.
Yeah.
And the day started with an hour with my therapist, and I talked about things that got to my career and everything else and the Jeopardy thing and the... I hadn't talked to her in 4 weeks, and I set me in a mood that was not beneficial to a peaceful day.
Well, that's so funny because you would think that you go to therapy and you walk out feeling a little bit lighter, but
I just was tired. I think it was more just being tired. I do feel lighter, and I do, as I'm sure you do, when you walk out of a therapy session, you just, the birds chirp nicer, the breeze in your car windows feels better. Mm-hmm. Everything's lighter. There's no doubt. It just wore me down. And then I had to go speak in front of 500 people in downtown St. Louis. And I was just tired.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And it's for a great cause and one I truly believe in. And it wasn't that. It was just, I just was tired.
Yeah. Well, therapy, by the way, can be exhausting because you're dealing with shit. And then, you know, on top of it, it's sometimes, most of the time, it's, you know, the birds chirp a little louder, but sometimes it sets you into a bit of a funk where you're like, oh, man. You know, because you have the good session and then a bad session. But the thing with the boys, it's such a great topic because... Again, you're right. You know, I don't spank, you know, you're not going to hit your kids. So once they get defiant like that, shit, you know, what do you do? I mean, there obviously are things to do, but sometimes the walk away is the best when you're just feeling too angry. But at the same time with Michelle, you know, it's like they're still little. They're trying to reason with these little beings is just futile. It's just not going to work. Their brains aren't developed yet to understand that, meaning you need to make a good choice. They're like, what?
We have made an appointment, had a conversation with a sleep specialist for the boys because, and this is where Joe, the aforementioned Joe, actually just erases the podcast from his library and never comes back. But we have met with a sleep specialist because in our new house, which is where we are now, our bedroom is on the first floor, the boys' bedroom is on the second floor. There's a guest bedroom by the boys' bedroom. So this has continued. I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast. I've talked about it with everybody I've ever met, including mm-hmm. the mailman.
Mm-hmm.
We have not slept in the same bed, Michelle and me, since we got in this house because one night I'll sleep in our bed downstairs and she'll sleep in the guest room because it's right by the boys. And then we flip it the next night. And invariably, Blake... we'll get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes howling and cry and walk in the guest room and get in bed with one of us, or he just will walk in and just get in bed. But only one time since we've been in this house has he slept in his bed the entire night. So now we have a script from the sleep specialist, how we're going to talk about this. We now have a lock on the outside of their door. And how many times are we going to go through this dance every night? And it's like you just said. I mean, these are three-year-old boys. And yeah. At some point, Blake's going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I just don't feel like parenting at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I'll just be like, just get in bed.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Get in my bed. I want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
so
God,
it's going to be, this is going to be hell trying to get these guys to buy into this program that they're not smart enough to understand.
How does it work? I mean, is there certain techniques that you've been... given, and then that lock on the outside of the door, like you're actually supposed to kind of lock them in their room?
Well, you give them one chance.
Yeah.
Walk them back in. You have a meeting. You have a chart. You have... We don't assign rewards for doing it. That's bad somehow. So,
right.
You know, you got to do it in the new age. way of thinking. So it's not like, hey, you slept in your bed all night. Here's a fucking gallon of ice cream for breakfast. I don't give a shit. I got a full night's sleep.
That's
so,
the best way to do it.
I know. Well, that doesn't fly in 2021. And it's smart choices and blah, bitty, blah. And so this is just going to be the end of Michelle and me. It's over. We're going to just fight relentlessly because I don't have the patience to put up with
So wait a minute.
Shit.
Wait. Okay. Where is, because is she more all in than you are? Is that where the
She's
friction comes?
She's all in on the script.
Okay.
She's all in on the script. And I at some point the script gets torched and it's go to sleep.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Right.
Go to sleep there. Go sleep on the roof. Go sleep in my car.
Yeah.
Go sleep. I don't care where you go sleep. Just go to sleep.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I know it so well. It's so funny. It's so true. At 4 a.m, you said it perfectly. You don't want to be a fucking parent at 3 a.m, 4 a.m.
No.
Like, being a parent is over. Like, now we're in survival mode, okay?
Yes.
Yes. Totally.
I'm like, so we're going to follow the script. So are we going to have cue cards for the script? It's going to be like SNL at night where somebody's holding a cue card up behind Blake's head. And I'm like, ah, okay, Blake, you have made an unwise decision. Let's review. And now let's walk back into bed. No, I don't want to. No. Well, you've done it again. So therefore, now we're going to lock you in your room and you're going to go bananas.
Ugh.
And I'm going to have to listen to this at 4 a.m. while you howl, throw yourself around the room and sleep on the carpet. Okay. This sounds great.
Oh my
God. This sounds awesome.
Have you tried that? Like, have you stuck to it and committed to the door lock?
We've kicked that can down. It was like, okay, we're going to start it Monday.
Yeah.
Well, now it's, you and I are talking on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't started it yet. Okay. We're going to start it. We're going to start it with the nanny when she's here and Michelle and I have to go to work this weekend. So the nanny, it's a little less emotional with not mommy or daddy. So maybe she can get the groundwork laid for this thing,
mm-hmm.
which maybe that's great. Maybe that goes up in smoke when mom and dad come home on Sunday night. Sunday night. I don't know. So we have not started it yet.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's crazy. It's just, you're in that shit right now, you know? I mean,
it's the worst age. It's the best age, and that part of it is the worst age. I'm going to trump Charles Dickens. The best of times, the worst of times. It was the age of fucking sleep training. It was the age of going to preschool.
Are they both in this zone?
Just Blake. Blake is the needy. I want to cuddle.
Yeah.
I want to lay on you. I want to get in bed. And when he gets in your bed, it's the best because he like wants to touch your leg with his leg and then he can go to sleep.
Aww.
So we're gonna extract that from his personality.
You're gonna harden his ass.
Right. Come, Blake, come snuggle. No.
Well,
I don't want to. Give me another cigarette.
Right. Exactly. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more daddy issues. You know, there's so many different ways to do it, you know, especially in LA where it's this sort of this attachment parenting where you feed on demand, you know, and you sleep with your kid, you co-sleep with your kid. There's 1,000 different ways to do it. We didn't do it that way, but at some point, this is what I always say, they're going to be sleeping in their own bed. At some point, they're not going to have a pacifier. At some point, they are going to learn how to read and write and do math, you know? But it's just the timing of it is, we all want it to, we want it to happen so fast or in this perfect amount of time. It's like, fuck it. He sleeps in your bed. He's not going to be 16 sleeping in your bed. You know?
No.
Eventually, he will move into his
own bed.
Well,
I'll be dead by then. I mean, he's 3, so. That's 13 years from now. I'll be 65. Maybe I won't be dead, but I'll
No. So when he's 21.
Yeah, I'll be 70.
That's 18 years?
18 years from now? Yeah, I'll be 70.
Yeah. All right. You still got it.
At 70?
Yeah.
That's why I went through a whole battery of tests for my heart. I'm wearing a Holter monitor, mm-hmm. not at this moment because I'm between applying it, but I've got to stay around for these kids. Like I'm trying to get in the best shape of my life. I'm wearing the Holter monitor. Like that worries me. What's I don't a, want to leave these kids. A yeah. Holter monitor.
I've never talked to you about that before.
Monitors your heart all day yeah. when you sleep, and I have an issue where a lot of times my heart will skip beats.
Mm.
And I think it'll do it sometimes for an extended period of time. I'm like, good night, everybody. It's been fun.
What does it feel? What does that feel like?
It's like a, you know, like your heart is like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like it goes, and it just rolls instead of going dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
It rolls.
Ooh.
And you can feel it in your throat. But I've had that since I was a little kid. I told my mom that when I was like 5. Like my heart feels weird. Mm. And my mom, who's the biggest hypochondriac and still is to this day, it's like, we're going to the heart doctor. So I was like a 5-year-old kid wearing a Holter monitor around, which back then was like wearing a reel-to-reel tape recorder around my neck. And now it's just an electronic patch that goes on your chest that goes to a cell phone. Back then, it was like the Fred Flintstone pterodactyl banging out on.
Oh, yeah. They had to actually take audio film and cut it to like hear your heart.
Right. Go into the dark room.
Right. That's an interesting topic that we haven't even really discussed, is sort of being an older father and whether that makes you fearful in any way. And obviously
completely.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate that part of it because, you know, my dad was an older dad and I know what that's like. And I remember playing catch with him on the beach in Florida during spring training and people coming up to him and saying, oh, that's so sweet. You're playing catch with your grandson. And he'd look at him like, fuck you. That's my kid, you know? And
yeah.
And now I'm in the same boat. My life is completely paralleled my father's life almost to weird levels where at the same time, basically, we were in a divorce and, you know, kids at an older age. But I got into my early 30s. I guess I was 33, just turned 33 when he died, which I was ready to be, you know, to handle that mm-hmm. because he and I were so close. You know, I think about it all the time. Math is not my friend. I feel like, okay, so I'm going to be 70 and they're 71 and they're going to be getting out of college. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that unless I get hit by a bus tonight, which what's the line? You get busy making plans and life intercedes.
Right,
so who
right.
knows?
That was a good paraphrase.
Yeah.
Yeah, life happens when you're busy making other plans or something like that.
That's Lennon.
That's Lennon.
Beautiful boy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Lennon.
I love that song.
Beautiful,
that song made me cry when the boys were born.
Yeah, that's a great song.
It's a great song. But yeah, I think about that all the time. So I'm trying to do everything I can, including work-wise, which is what I ended up talking to my therapist about. Like, how much do I want to continue doing what I'm doing at the pace that I'm doing it? I the answer is I don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the next move is, but you know, you think about Jeopardy and doing that and it coming off well and the ratings were up, which I haven't seen that article written anywhere. Mm-hmm. except for, you know, I haven't seen it in my hometown newspaper.
Right.
But that's not it. So it's I don't know what the next move is, but it's not doing this for the rest of my life.
I know that. I know. And then you stay healthy, though. I mean, do you eat right and work out and you're mindful of sort of your body? And
yeah. Yeah. I eat as well as I can, realistically. Probably drink too much. And I work out a lot and I'm trying like hell to stay fit and making sure that the systems are in working order until I get hit by that bus.
with you and Troy's face.
Look at him all over the front of the bus.
Yeah.
But boy, right. what a healthy heart he had.
No, exactly. And I'm sure the billboard will be, the Fox billboard of you and Troy will be on the side of the bus.
Right. And hopefully my boss isn't driving it. But yeah, that was my dad's old joke, which is kind of an offshoot of this. I may have said this on this podcast before, but he's like, I'm gonna die in the booth. Like, Dad, he's like, no, I'm gonna die in the booth, and two guys are gonna be walking in downtown St. Louis, and one's gonna turn to the other and say, hey, did you hear Buck died in the booth last night during the Cardinal game? And the other guy will say, oh, wow, that's too bad. Did the Cardinals win?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Life just moves on. So that's how it goes. And if I tap out at Fox or anywhere else, life moves on. Sports move on.
Are you afraid of death?
When I was younger, I was more afraid of death. I don't really think about it that much anymore, but right. I was pretty obsessed with it when I was in my 20s. And I don't know why. Maybe because I was a young dad and I felt like I had so much to do and so much to set up, and I didn't want to be taken from that. But I don't obsess on it. Are you scared of death?
I'd say I'm a little fearful. You know, I think at the end of the day, just when you do have fears or anxieties, you know, I mean, it's the unknown. So death is the unknown. You know, I fear it not necessarily for myself. I mean, I do, but just to, like you said, for my kids, you know, for the people around me, I just feel like I need to be here. You know, so that makes me nervous, I guess. But I don't walk around fearing death every day, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not totally comfortable with it. I'm not just like, oh, yeah, we all live and we all die. And that's just the way it is. You know, I'd love to get to that point. I think that if you can truly feel that way, you know, you have experienced the ultimate freedom in life. When you have no thoughts or no issues or no anxiety around death, and it's just part of life, it's got to be so freeing. You know,
I don't know how anybody, even the most zealous religious person, can totally feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to hook them up to a lie detector. And I say that only because, and maybe so, I could be dead wrong, but I think of my mom, who is as religious a person as anybody I've ever met in my life. And, you know, here she is at 83, and I think it scares her, the idea of not being here and what's next and where, you know, I think in her mind and in her heart, she believes where she's going to go. But at the same time, I think that leap is frightening. It has to be. That's just part of mortality and being a human being walking this planet. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody that can go, oh, I'm not scared of death, and be completely honest with
mm-hmm.
you, unless you don't give a shit about yourself. And
right.
I don't know.
Well, that's religion. You know, it's, you know, that's a whole other conversation, a whole other podcast. But, you know, as far as death goes, it's that belief in something bigger. You know, it's just comforting. It's faith at the end of the day. It's not even about religion. It is couched in whatever religion you have faith in. But at the end of the day, it's just faith. And faith that when I die, I will be taken care of. There is something else. It is beautiful and even beyond anything we could experience on this earth. And when there's a tragedy in your life and you are religious, then that faith will take you through it because you're believing in something bigger, even if it's not real, even if it doesn't fucking exist, which there is no proof that it exists. But that is comforting to us, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, theologians and religious people would completely disagree with the idea that there's no proof that, you know, there are markers, and there's enough proof to believe that exists. I just think there's so much unknown, no matter what you believe in. If you believe in the Big Bang Theory, or you're just a fan of the show The Big Bang Theory, or if you're just extremely religious, there's just too much unknown. Like, where did everything start? How did it start? Where did it come from? The Big Bang Theory. Okay, well, what was there before the Big Bang Theory? And where did that start? And how did it just, there's too much beyond our comprehension. So that is I think, the saving grace in my mind. Like, there's that stuff we don't even understand, whether you're in one camp or the other.
Yeah.
So,
but there is no, but
like there
is
has
no,
to be more.
But there's no proof. What are you saying? There's proof. There's no proof that God exists. There's no proof that we know where we go after
we die.
Well,
I think the most religious person will say, look in the face of Wilder and tell me that God doesn't exist. Look in the.
That's not what you're talking about.
I understand that's not empirical evidence of the existence of that, but there's a beauty and an order and a way about this world that people will say in the Bible, and it was how it was written, and that it's still relevant today. And I mean, this is the last thing I want to get into with you.
I know. I'm just saying that still isn't proof. That's QAnon. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, well, this is what's happening.
That's insanity. No.
Why? It's just...
Why?
There's no proof. There's just... If you believe it enough, then there's proof to you. But there's no...
Okay, that's fair. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
If you believe it enough and you believe in the word of God and the Bible or the Quran or whatever, then you believe it to be true. That's it. And everybody's free to believe what they believe.
We don't have to get into this. This is a touchy subject with you, and it's okay. We'll deal with this later.
It's not touchy. It's not touchy with me personally, and I know exactly what you're saying. I feel like when you get into this in today's world, some people are like all in. They want to hear this. Some people, yeah, it's just an immediate turn off, and they just don't want to think about it, hear about it, be challenged, be whatever. And I respect that. So I'm good with not talking about religion or politics. We don't talk politics on this show.
No.
And I think for good reason. We're all inundated with that all day, every day.
Yeah.
So give people a break.
Oh, I know.
If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues, and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break. Well, then let's talk football.
Well, I'll just tell you what I'm doing this weekend. So I leave tomorrow, Thursday, the day this drops, and fly to New York. And I'll be in New York for the 20th anniversary. Hard to believe it's been 20 years of 9/11. And the Yankees are playing the Mets. So I do that baseball game on Saturday night. And then I fly Saturday night after the game to Jacksonville to watch the displaced New Orleans Saints after Hurricane Ida play the Green Bay Packers in a neutral site for our first football game, and then fly back home on Sunday night. So it's a lot. And this is worth talking about, because I've talked about it actually in other podcasts. People have had me as a guest talking about my dad's speech that he read at Busch Stadium 6 days after 9/11 when baseball started back up. And the question was then, was it the right thing to do? Was it disrespectful? Was it to the people who lost their lives in 9/11 to start back up in something that seems to be so trivial as baseball and sports? And I think there was a valid argument for that. And then the other side of the argument and the other side of the coin was, well, we got to get back to life at some point here, as awful and as tragic and as scary as that day was. We do have to show that life here is not going to be stopped. And so he read this poem down on the field. He had written it. It was a year before he died. Almost a full year before he passed away. And you have to realize that my dad was a Depression era kid, had zero, worked his ass off, was drafted, went to World War II, was shot in Germany, was in a hospital in Paris when the war ended, came back, and at that time, the government was paying for GIs, for the GI Bill, for people who had served to go to college at their state college. So he went to Ohio State, got that higher education, and then started his broadcast career and built his name in St. Louis, built his name in baseball and football, was in two halls of fame, and had this great platform to do good and had the public trust. And he went down on the field and read this poem that he had written during that six-day gap between 9/11 and the restart of baseball. And he had terrible Parkinson's. I mean, he was really weakened. He had diabetes. He had so many things going on. And I saw him in the booth up at the press box before he went down there. And I said, "Dad, you're going to cry." And with the shaking, and it may have the opposite effect of what you hope it'll have. I don't think you should do it. And he said, "I'm not going to cry." And I said, "Dad," because he cried at everything. Mm-hmm. I said, "Dad, you're going to cry." And he put his finger in my face and he said, "I will not cry. I'll bet you $100 I don't cry." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Okay, you're on." So then he went downstairs, went onto the field, read this poem, and actually said something before the poem that was even more poignant to me. We're in this packed house at Busch Stadium, and he said, "I think by now the answer to the question, should we be here, has been answered. And the answer is yes." And the crowd went crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was because before that, it was really eerie being in a big stadium again and wondering if it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Then he reads the poem, and between the two of us, the only one that's crying is me up in the booth. I'm about to do the game on TV. He plowed through it like a champ, and he came back up on the elevator, which they held for him, back up. And instead of going in and sitting down and doing the game on radio, he came right into my booth where I was doing TV. And he stuck his hand out for the $100 that we bet. And I just smacked his hand and said, gave him a thumbs up. And he just shook his head, went in and did the game on radio. So it was, I think of all the things that he did and experienced and had in life, it came to that moment at Busch Stadium on the 17th of September in 2001. I think everything he had done up to that point fed into that moment.
Wow, that's a great story.
I don't know about you, but as for me, the question has already been answered. Should we be here? Yes. Should we show others how to demonstrate our resolve? Yes, and we shall do it here this evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to baseball. Welcome back to Busch Stadium. To all of the fans tuning in around the country, welcome to St. Louis. The Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers and all of baseball welcome you back to Busch Stadium and this special evening in memory of those who lost their lives in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania, and in honor of the heroic rescue workers and the pride that we have in our country, which we shall show you here this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to read a poem which I have written for this occasion, after which there will be a special 21-gun fireworks salute. Since this nation was founded under God more than 200 years ago, we have been the bastion of freedom, the light that keeps the free world aglow. We do not covet the possessions of others. We are blessed with the bounty we share. We have rushed to help other nations, anything, anytime, anywhere. War is just not our nature. We won't start, but we will end the fight. If we are involved, we shall be resolved to protect what we know is right. We have been challenged by a cowardly foe who strikes and then hides from our view. With one voice we say, we have no choice today. There is only one thing to do. Everyone is saying the same thing and praying that we end these senseless moments we are living. As our fathers did before, we shall win this unwanted war, and our children will enjoy the future we'll be giving.
And it was the same night. So then the Mets are playing, the Braves. My broadcast partner, John Smoltz, is playing for the Braves, wasn't pitching. And Mike Piazza of the Mets hits a game-winning home run in the bottom of the eighth. And it was like New York celebrating. And then it was another powerful moment. Mets won that game. And to see these sports teams, you know, provide a bit of a distraction. And in many cases, the Giants and the Yankees and the Mets went and they were there at ground zero and they were there at the Battery with mm-hmm. families trying to find loved ones that had been lost. And it's hard. I would think it would be hard for people to understand, people of a certain age that weren't old enough at the time or even born at the time, to think back, and this is 20 years ago, and I can't speak for you, but for me, to remember how vulnerable we felt in our own country mm-hmm. and how vulnerable for an amount of time being in a large gathering mm-hmm. felt. And that's why it was weird being back in a stadium and doing the World Series that year, which I did in the Bronx in New York. It was a great World Series. But it was a powerful time for this country. And here we are 20 years later, more divided than maybe we've ever been.
I know. It's kind of heartbreaking. How about that, huh? I know. It's true. It's a good point. We're more divided than we've ever been, it feels. And 20 years ago, we'd never been more cohesive.
President Bush walks out in the middle of the diamond before game three. And it was so hard even to get in the stadium. And I was nervous. I had ricin, or I had Cipro in my bag because there were like ricin concerns. Mm-hmm. There was all this weird upheaval going on. And you don't know what it's going to be like at Yankee Stadium. You think, oh my God, this is going to be the biggest target in the world. It's the World Series and it's in New York and the Yankees and the symbol of mm-hmm. America. And he walks out and delivers one of the most powerful pitches and moments mm-hmm. I've ever seen where mm-hmm. it's wearing the bulletproof vest mm-hmm. under a jacket and he stands on the rubber mm-hmm. and throws a strike and politics was not even in the equation.
Yep.
It didn't matter that he was Republican. He was just the president and this was a moment for the country and it might be the last time we've had one of those moments in this country where it's like, you know what? That was chilling, and maybe you didn't like him as president, but it meant something.
Yeah,
and that's gone.
I remember that. Yep. Well, what about? So you're not gonna wax poetic during the game. I mean,
we'll have moments. We'll have moments that built in extended breaks where we'll have an extra 15 seconds coming back to roll in a memory or probably play that Piazza home run, probably play my dad, little snippet of my dad's speech, probably, see, we're going to talk to Joe Torre mm-hmm. in the booth.
Have you been writing? I mean, do you have to write stuff for this for you? I mean, you know, you're so off the cuff, right? And that's why you're as great as you are. Even in our friendship, you're quick-witted, you're funny as shit, your brain moves fast. With something like this, with this importance, do you have to write? Do you have to think of what you're going to say beforehand?
Yeah, I'll have a couple phrases, something that I can go to if I'm stuck, but I would rather just feel it and say it. Mm-hmm. But it this is a weird time in our country to just feel and say stuff off the cuff.
I know.
Am I going to talk about us being more divided than we've ever been? No. That's not my place to do on a Yankees-Mets game. At the end of the day, we're doing a game, and it's the 20th anniversary of a horrible day, but it's still a game that matters to both teams, and you're doing the game. But there's time in there if we're going to talk to Joe Torre, and I forget who else. I read the email today. Somebody else is coming in the booth. Maybe it might be Piazza, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to them about what it was like. And somebody said this to me the other day, and I think this is true. 9/11 is different for a New Yorker. 9/11 is different for somebody who was around the Pentagon on that day. Mm-hmm. 9/11 is different, obviously, if you were directly affected by it and lost someone. But if you were in New York, it was an attack on that city. There's just, it's a different feel than it is for me, who went to go pick my daughter up, Natalie, at her school because everything shut down. We were all huddled and scared and glued to the TVs. But if you were in New York and you were there and you could see it, it's just a different, it's a different remembrance.
Yeah, I wasn't even in the country. I was in Vancouver. It was my first day of work on my first television show that I'd ever done. And I was got in the car early to drive to the studio, and on the radio, I heard it on the radio. It was crazy. So that
and because it had developed from, oh my God, a plane just flew into the one tower. Somebody, a pilot made a horrible error, to it happened again. There's no error. This is an attack.
Yeah.
And it's so the mood, the feel of it is like, oh my God, what's next? And then flights are grounded. Then the flight goes down in Pennsylvania, and they may be trying to hit the White House, and they hit the Pentagon. And I mean, it just, wow.
Mm.
Wow.
What a day, man. And it's funny because when we were inundated with it, when we were watching television, watching the news, these images were replayed over and over and over again. So there was, you become desensitized during that time, meaning you see them so much. But when you take a break from it, you know, and then you don't see them anymore, and these anniversaries come up, and then you get to see it again, it's unbelievable. Just
it
unbelievable.
Is.
You know, it just takes you back, and that day was so crazy and just so unreal and scary, and everyone was panicking, my mom calling, get out, die, and no one knew what was happening.
Yeah.
It was nuts. It was nuts.
And there's so many things to talk about, and we can wrap this up here, but I think with regard to that day, I saw something on CBS News this past weekend that was just a great, exhaustive, in a good way, piece on the different sides of that day. And the reporter was interviewing somebody in the military, and he said there's a gallows humor joke that goes around the military and those who went to Afghanistan right after. A knock knock joke. Knock knock. Who's there? 9/11. 9/11. Who? Oh, I thought you said you'd never forget.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strong because it was just so in the front of your mind. And now here we are, 20 years later. Talked about all the divisions and the way we are now interacting, at least publicly on television, and the fighting and everything else, the infighting that goes on in this country every day, that becomes just mind numbing. And then you think of they went to the point of talking about, are kids being taught about 9/11? Do kids that are 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that, you know, you'd have to be over 20 to have even been alive. Are they even aware of what happened? Mm-hmm. And is it taught in school and what the history of that is and what that day was like? And then she went on, the reporter talked to the photographer who just was clicking pictures of people jumping out of the tower instead of burning to death. Mm-hmm. They just jumped to their death.
Yeah.
And the picture of a person just completely inverted, going down in perfect focus with the World Trade Center tower behind him. I mean, this happened in our country. And it's, you wonder if people really even get it.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
Of a certain age.
Well, it's just perspective. You know, it's also just with all the infighting, with all of it going on, you know, to try to gain some perspective.
Yep.
But.
Well. I see Wilder's in there. Do you have to go to school?
No, he's supposed to go to school, but you got to get tested every week, right? Every weekend, you got to get tested to then provide to the school to show that you have been tested. And it was Labor Day and my birthday and blah, blah, blah. We just totally fucking spaced it.
Bing forgot too.
He did?
Yeah. Like lots of people.
Lots of people forgot, apparently. So, you know. You show up to school and they're like, you need the vaccination or you need the test results. And so all three kids are home.
I was just going to ask you, what tools do I need to build the desk? Because I'm going to clean my room and then start building.
Yeah. Open the box. Get a box cutter.
You need a wrench.
Open the box.
You need a blowtorch.
They probably have tools provided. Otherwise, on the instructions, it will tell you, here's what you need to assemble.
Look at you, multitasking. Look at that face. Tell me God doesn't exist. Look at that face. Look at that hair and tell me God doesn't exist.
He's got good hair. He's got good hair. He's got good hair. All right.
Well, this was a podcast that was pulled out of the nosedive about 10 minutes in.
I know. No, we're always good, man. We always pull out. Well,
yeah, it comes together. I mean, we have seven kids between us, so maybe not.
I said it always, we always pull it out, and then you said it comes together.
Yeah. Look at that. See what we did there?
Wow.
Unintentionally?
That was amazing.
And I said, we have seven kids between us, so clearly that's not always the case.
Yeah. God. We're funny when we don't even try. You know what I mean, Joe?
No. You're a poet. And you
didn't even
weren't
know
even
it.
Aware of it. You weren't even aware.
You weren't even
of it.
Aware.
You weren't
of being
even cognizant.
You weren't even aware of being a poet.
Okay. Well, last thing I want to say.
Yeah.
You have to watch on Netflix, Untold, Breaking Point, about Marty Fish, our friend.
Okay.
We have to get Marty Fish on this podcast. I'm sure he is now.
Is that
inundated?
Is that the newest
this thing
one?
Started. It's the newest one. I didn't even know that series existed.
So wait, before you go on,
and he's a good friend. It is so friggin' good. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen.
Okay, so these are my cousins who produced this Battered Bastards of Baseball. You know, Wild Wild Country, which they won Emmys for, and this is their new series. This is,
yeah, these are a little shorter. These are like 1 hour.
It's Chap and Mac, and then Brocker does the music. Yeah, they're sick. They're amazing. I've seen two of them. I want to see the hockey one, and then, of course, the Marty one. But I saw, you know, the Palace, the Ron Artest one, which is before that.
So that's the one above. I haven't seen any of them. So that's the one above it. I clicked on that and then I was trying to find it. It's not really well.
Ooh, good. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Well laid out. I'm telling you, man, I couldn't go to sleep.
Yeah.
And this, mainly because he's a dear friend of both of ours. I had no idea. And everything he has dealt with is shocking.
Wow.
And how it made him. Well, I'm not even going to say.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it tonight. Well, I fly into Albuquerque, and I got to do my fantasy football draft, and then I'm going to watch it.
You got to learn your lines.
Yeah, I got to learn my lines, too. I got to learn my lines.
Right. Put the gun down.
Freeze, FBI.
Put the gun. Check every outhouse, every hen house, every whore house, every... crack house every...
Tommy Lee. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones. All right, you have a nice trip to Albuquerque and make us all proud.
Okay? I will, Joe. Thank you. All right, love you, pal.
I'm so glad we had this time together.
Me too.
Bye.
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.